there is more to the Epstein story than has come out. They'll say with Virginia Giuffre, well, she wasn't underage here, the offences took place abroad. But, you know, there was, Channel 4 looked into this, there were people who came forward in this country, there were offences committed here.
I didn't know there were accusers of Andrew here. Is that unrelated to Epstein?
It's connected with Epstein. He said, you know, can you line up some blondes for me?
Oh, I can't ask that.
Diplomat said, I'm not a pimp. Why is he behaving like this? Why did he pay this woman so much money, the woman he claims never to have met? There are court cases still going on. Mm. I mean, they're all suing each other for various reasons.
Really? Do you think that Prince Andrew's reckoning will come?
I don't think the story's finished at all.
Could he end up in prison?
Well, that's a good question.
This podcast is nothing if not timely. And so I had a bunch of episodes to come out and I saw that, what's it called, the thing on Netflix at the moment, Snoop or something like that? I can't even remember what it's called now. Prince Andrew, Netflix. Scoop. Why would it be called Snoop? There was a dog called Snoop in Anatomy for... Oh, that's another film I can't think of the name of. Anyway, Anatomy of a Body or something. Now I've got to look that up. Snoop. Anatomy of a Fall. They had a dog called Snoop in it, and I watched it, and that's a good film. Anyway, I'm not speaking for those things and those people. What I am speaking about is Prince Andrew, who obviously is back in the news because the Netflix thing Scoop. Well, it so happened that another Andrew, Andrew Loney, who's been on this podcast once or twice before, we'd already spoken all about Prince Andrew and all sorts of things going on. Now, what he tells me in this particular episode is stuff I really didn't know, and you know, we felt it was necessary to do another episode because no one's really talking about this. And that's the fact that Andrew has accusers, it appears, in the UK. I thought it was all to do with Epstein and the island and everything, but there is also some extra UK accusers, and there are possibilities that this is going to go further and that the man might at some point see the inside of a cell. That's what this was all about. So I hope you find this of interest. Please do follow Andrew Loney's podcast, Scandalmongers. The Scandalmongers. It's a fantastic podcast, really, really interesting, about not just the royals, but all kinds of big scandals. I mean, that's interesting, isn't it? That's interesting in itself. And if you want to know about secrets and scandals and things, I know I keep going on about it, but it's actually coming out now. In just a couple of days, The Psychology of Secrets, My Adventures with Murderers, Cults and Influencers. You guys pretty much make all the difference as to how well it does and whether it gets into any kind of bestseller list and things like that. So please do go out and get hold of the Kindle, the Audible version, or the hardback for The Psychology of Secrets. Anyway, enjoy this episode. It's fascinating stuff. Andrew Loney, just to give you an insight, he is a wonderful writer of the book Mountbatten. He wrote another book about Edward, of course, as well, and Wallace Simpson. And he's also a publisher, a literary agent. So he does all those kinds, you know, lots of books and things. And he's a very smart person with a lot of royal connections. So enjoy this episode and learn some stuff about Prince Andrew.
Tell me a little bit about some of the darkness of Prince Andrew.
Well, we know a certain amount about his links with Jeffrey Epstein and his activities there and the accusations that have been made to him by Virginia Giuffre. But I'm finding as I do my research that in some ways the darker material is his links with various businessmen who he took on his trips when he was a publicly paid trade envoy. And I'm concentrating my book on exactly what he was doing on these trips which are financed by the taxpayer. And if he was lining his own pocket while he was meant to be drumming up business for Britain.
Wow. Okay. So those are the two sides of Andrew. And then I think there's a third that I find really interesting, which is just his personality. We've talked a bit before about this, but, you know, the teddy bears, the getting staff to do curtains and things like that. And then, of course, his wife. And I think we can talk about all of those aspects, or his ex-wife and remarrying wife. What are some of the allegations that we spoke about last time just around Andrew on Epstein?
Well, I mean, he gave this famous interview to Newsnight in November 2019. And in so many of the things that he said in that, I mean, one were immaterial to the case that was being made against him. But the other thing is that so many of these things have been shown not to be true. I mean, he's been pictured sweating at the time that he met Virginia Giuffre running out of nightclubs. He claimed that he'd only seen Epstein at a particular time, and then the records have now emerged that he carried on seeing him even after he was meant to have sort of broken the relationship. So, you know, in some ways, it's very difficult to know what to believe. I mean, the alibi of being down at the Pizza Express in Woking, which could easily be solved by looking at the logs at Buckingham Palace. The policeman who was on duty with him has asked for those logs to be released. I understand the logs would show that he did go back to Buckingham Palace that night, and it would cause a bit of a fuss because he wasn't actually due to be in Buckingham Palace that night. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that he could have done to clear his name, and he hasn't. And, of course, he's been chased by lawyers and others in the States, not as a person of interest, someone they should talk to who was a witness. And he's refused to go. He's refused to talk to them. He's refused to answer questions. And you've got to wonder, why is he behaving like this? Why did he pay this woman so much money, the woman he claims never to have met? So that's one element. And then clearly, as you say, there's the element of his whole general behavior. And I think one of the problems is he made very few friends on the way up, and now he's weakened. He hasn't got many supporters apart from his ex-wife.
That thing about Pizza Express, do royals just sit in Pizza Express? I've never seen that. Is that something that happens somewhere like Pizza Express?
Well, I mean, you know, it was a children's birthday party. He might well have gone. I think he went to pick up the daughter. Mm. But also, you can go from Woking from a children's party in the afternoon to a nightclub in London at 9 o'clock quite quickly. So it was never really a very convincing excuse anyway. And the people claim that they can't remember seeing him there. There's a diary entry showing that he was going to a manicurist that afternoon. I mean, that's quite interesting in itself. I mean, you talk about his love of teddy bears. Mm. And not many men go to a manicurist on a Saturday afternoon. Right. So, you know, there are a lot of questions that could easily be cleared up. And he hasn't been totally honest. And I think, like a lot of these stories, the cover-up gets worse than the original sin. Well, I mean, what I would say about Epstein is, you know, there are clearly a lot of female victims. A lot of them have signed NDAs. A lot of them are now married women with children. They don't want the publicity. But, you know, we have got depositions still to be opened. I mean, there may be people who may still emerge. There are court cases still going on. Mm. I mean, they're all suing each other for various reasons.
Really?
Various people suing Virginia Giuffre for libel and all sorts of stuff. So I suspect, and this is how things do emerge from the court cases, that there may be further disclosures, and that must be what worries Prince Andrew, and indeed a whole series of other people, because clearly other names have come into the frame, Richard Branson, Bill Clinton, Trump, and, you know, I suspect the lawyers have tried to keep those names out of the papers, but, you know, there's only so much you can do if they're court records which are released.
Is he still an active member of the royal family in any sense? Because they're in a bit of a dire straits, really, through illness. Obviously, Kate, Charles, Harry and Meghan are gone. They're sort of, who's left?
Well, it was very interesting, his appearance at the funeral for the King of Greece, because, you know, there he was, in effect, leading the mourners. So he was sitting at the front. And so is that a family occasion? Is that a state occasion? I mean, it was filmed. It's written about. So he's sort of half in, half out. And I think he's constantly pushing to see if he can get more in. And I think we had that moment, for example, at Sandringham at Christmas, where both Fergie and he were in the lineup. Again, a very public occasion. They would say a family occasion. But in the past, various people like Fergie have been kept out of sight. So, and there must have been worries that people would shout out and say things. It'd be all rather embarrassing. Mm-hmm. So I think they're constantly pushing just to see how far they can take him. I mean, he's not lost his Knight of the Garter, which he could easily have taken away with a stroke of a pen. He retains certain titles, which were given to him by his mother after these accusations with Epstein emerged. So she was basically giving everyone two fingers, saying, I'll do what I want with my son. You know, taking away his dukedom of York is leads parliamentary legislation, so that's more difficult. But no, he's still around. And I think the thing is, he's now not a public servant. There's less scrutiny of what he's up to in terms of his business activities. And so all the contacts that he made during that decade as a trade envoy, he's calling in those favors. And there's nothing really that anyone can do to keep an eye on him. He's flying in private planes. It's all done behind the scenes, nominee accounts, different names in the bank accounts. Very, very difficult to actually tell what he's up to.
King Charles, I remember saying he wanted to have a stripped back royal family, a smaller family, I suppose. So what does it mean that Andrew's still in some sense there, even after his disgrace?
Well, I think the feeling was that the royal family was costing a lot of money. There were a lot of people there who seemed not to be carrying their weight. And I support the slimmed down monarchy. I think, you know, there were an awful lot of hangers on who were getting the benefits of being the royal family and not really doing much. But, you know, the public does expect, you know, royals to turn up. Charities find that if they're involved, they raise more money. And there are not enough royals of the right generation to go around. The thing is, we've seen one generation sort of move out, the Closters and the Kents, and others are now in their 80s. You know, the king and his sister and the queen are in their 70s. So we're then jumping to the next generation, which is really only Andrew. It's only Edward and Sophie, the Duke and Duchess of Edinburgh. And without Fergie and Andrew, that makes that generation difficult. And then the next generation down, there's really only the Prince and Princess of Wales. You haven't got Prince Harry, and the others are too young. And to be fair to them, they've got their own careers, they've got their own families. The last thing they probably, a lot of them, want to do is to go out and open up, you know, shops and hospitals and give speeches. So I think we've got to change our expectations. Rather than have more of them on the balcony. I don't mind them on the balcony. It's quite interesting to see who's there, who's in and out. But I think people were thinking the cost, for example, of security were just not being justified.
Do you think we are getting towards the end of the royals?
No, I think they're great survivors. You know, we have, in a sense, two generations to go. You know, who knows when that might happen. But George looks like, you know, perfectly nice boy, well-trained. Support for the monarchy hasn't really dipped dramatically. There's quite a lot of sympathy for them at the moment. I think the king particularly has played things very well. I think Princess of Wales is extremely popular. And now with the statement about the state of her health, I suspect that, you know, apart from a few odd people, that's a closed matter and that will be the end of it until she's ready to do more public duties. But it does show the vulnerabilities, that it just needs a couple of key people to get ill. And there's a lot of pressure on others.
It's extraordinary how popular they are, though, or at least how interested the world is in them. You almost get this sort of double speak from people when you travel around the world. Americans, how is it? Why is everybody interested in this family? Who cares about? And yet they dominate the headlines in most countries, or most English-speaking countries around the world, just when one of them's ill or something like that.
Well, you know, a lot of them, most of them do a terrific job. I think they have a common touch. It brings the nation together. I think most monarchies are slightly more stable than other countries with presidents. And I think people, you know, think that monarchy is a good thing, and it's just important that we have the right people as the monarchs. And the problem is occasionally bad apples are thrown up, and the royal family has become more ruthless about dealing with them, as we've seen with both Andrew and Harry.
Yeah, well, with Andrew, are you still writing or researching a book on him?
Yes, my book on Andrew and Fergie should be out next year. And it's very much a dual portrait. I mean, I think she's very much involved with all aspects of his life. People say that they'll remarry. I don't think that's true at all. But she has the best of both worlds. She's linked to him. She lives in Royal Lodge. She gets the benefits of royal cooks and, of course, status. And yet she's free to do what she wants, which is to make lots of money, which she's been continuing to do. And this is one of the things I'm looking at, how that money's made. Is it made trading on her royal status? Is it abusing her position as a charity patron in order to make connections to further her business interests? So that's very much the focus of the book.
Interesting. Okay. And as you say, you started to feel that some of the real issues with Andrew were related to his work as a trade envoy.
Yeah. I mean, there are controversies all the way through his life. And as you say, he's extremely rude to people, very self-important, not very self-aware, a bully, a bore, not very bright. But, you know, I have had some stories with him being quite effective as a trade envoy and showing kindnesses to people. And he has clearly a group of friends. So there's another side there. But, you know, he's always been very different in terms of his character to his siblings. Yeah, the story will focus, I think, on those years as a trade envoy.
Well, what does it mean to be a trade envoy exactly? Just a lay person?
Well, they had the Duke of Kent, who was basically sent out to drum up trade for Britain. He would lead delegations abroad with bankers and various businessmen. And the idea was to fly the flag for Britain. Royals, clearly, particularly in the Middle East and Southeast Asia, carry a certain amount of weight. They can do things that perhaps politicians or celebrities can't do. It's a much more long-term relationship. And the idea was that Andrew, when he left the Navy in 2001, would take on this role. Mm. And champion trade, and the way he championed startup businesses with his pitch at the palace. But I think very quickly there was a suspicion that he was using this government-paid or taxpayer-paid role, not so much for promoting British trade, but promoting himself. He was bringing along people, for example, who had bankrolled him and his wife, rather cozy relationships with a man called David Rowland, who ran a bank for very rich people. And I think one of the things that worries me is that there's no record, or certainly no record that's being made public of who was accompanying him on these trips. Because, you know, normally we would have that information and we would be able to ask, what, you know, why were they there? I think one of the other concerning things is he didn't always stay in the embassy. He stayed in five-star hotels away from the ambassador, where he could perhaps do business separately. I'm certainly talking to some of the people that the ambassadors, he was asking to see people who were not on the agenda in terms of helping British trade, but he was keen to meet them. And you have to ask why, on whose behalf was he meeting them? Wasn't the British taxpayer. So I think there are a lot of unanswered questions, and we're not getting answers. I'm told on one hand that any papers related to Prince Andrew are closed until 2065. When he would be 105 years old. The Department of Trade claim they have no record of this 10 years of activity. The Foreign Office have nothing. A Cabinet Office have nothing. So what's happened to these papers? They should, by law, be in the National Archives. Why have they disappeared? Contacts of mine in the Department of Trade have said that the internal computer has had everything connected with Prince Andrew wiped from it, so that no one can even internally access stuff. I've discovered that almost everyone who deals with either Andrew or Fergie has signed non-disclosure agreements. Now, why should you need to sign those if you are not doing anything that you're ashamed of?
Hey, it's Andrew. If you're enjoying Heretics, there's another podcast I want to recommend to you, especially if climate change, global conflicts, and an upcoming election are making you feel like we're on the brink of disaster. What Could Go Right is hosted by Progress Network founder Zachary Carabel and executive director Emma Varvalukas. On What Could Go Right, the hosts sit down with expert guests to discuss the world's most pressing issues without resorting to pessimism or despair that we hear so often. Instead, they look back at how far society has come and look forward at what it will take to achieve an even brighter future. Is progress on the way? They may not have all the answers, but on What Could Go Right, they're asking the key questions. Tune in to hear interviews with upcoming guests like writer Coleman Hughes, CNN host Fareed Zakaria, and economist Alison Schrager. If you're looking for a weekly dose of optimistic ideas from smart people, join them every Wednesday on What Could Go Right, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So what do you imagine, Mike? I mean, I guess we can only speculate. What kinds of things would he be hiding? And when you say he's working for himself more than for us?
Well, we know from various court cases that appears to have been acting as a fixer for various people, taking a commission for introducing people. Fergie certainly openly acts as a brand ambassador. There's a man called Johnny Hon, who's a businessman in Hong Kong and here, who's paid her large sums of money and her daughters and Zara and Peter Phillips, basically for introductions and to have photos taken with him, which he uses clearly to promote his businesses. Mm. She's involved with a failing venture called Gate Ventures, which has a lot of Chinese investors who put money in. That money then was used to help start up one of Fergie's businesses. And hasn't really done what it was meant to, what the investors thought it was meant to do, which was to invest in theatre and film. We've had a recent case in the High Court, and as I say, this is how often we learn these things, from a man called Salman Turk, who was basically charged with fraud. A Turkish businesswoman gave him large sums of money, which he needed to get out of Turkey, and which he was meant to invest. Now, over £1 million of this was paid to the Duke and Duchess of York and one of their daughters. They haven't explained what this money was for. When I interviewed Salman Turk, he said it was money for a party, it was money for as a birthday present or a wedding present. You don't give large sums of money like that to people you don't know. The woman thought that she was paying this money to Prince Andrew because he'd got her a passport. Well, I don't think he did, and he shouldn't be able to. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of money flying around with people not giving proper explanations for it. My own research suggests that Salman Turk is involved as a middleman, and this is a way of getting money to the Yorks from people that they've done business with.
Wow. Are they ever litigious with, you know, if you speculate these things? I know you've done your research. Would they ever come out and go, Andrew Loney, we're taking you down?
Well, I'm sure I'll get rude letters, and I'm sure the book will have to be read very carefully. But I'm very happy to respond to them, because I'm, you know, collecting chapter and verse. This would only make the problem bigger for them. It would just become more public. I think what they're trying to do is shut this thing down and make it go quiet. So in the Salman Turk thing, for example, the press were very careful to say there's no accusation of wrongdoing by the Duke and Duchess of York. But even the judge himself expressed surprise at what was, what this money was for, that they'd been paid.
Wow. Because Harry and Meghan are quite litigious, aren't they? But I don't know if I've seen that Andrew going around.
No, Andrew and Fergie have not. Well, Fergie has tried to sue. I suppose the most famous case is just over a decade ago. She was caught in a sting by the News of the World, offering access to Andrew for $500,000. And in fact, took £5,000 and took £40,000 as a down payment. And this was filmed on camera with her saying, you know, basically, you give me the money and I'll give you access to Andrew, and we can do some business. And this was a sort of fake shake businessman.
Is that illegal or immoral?
Well, she said that she had been entrapped. But the fact is that, you know, this story was going around that she was offering access. This is why they set up the sting. Mm.
But to do that itself, to offer access to Andrew, is that something that shouldn't be happening? Because it's
well, we don't pay the royal family to feather their own nests. And though she would say she's not a member of the royal family, she has all the perks of being a member. She uses her title. I mean, that's what people assume.
Yeah.
So, yes, he's abusing his position as a royal. They're there, you know, to do good deeds, not to make money for themselves from their position.
Yeah. So, Meghan Markle.
But she did try and sue the fake sheikh, and she abandoned the case. I think she realized that she really hadn't got a leg to stand on. So time and time again, people have threatened to sue her, not so much for libel, but for not just paying her bills. And these cases have gone to the High Court. It's a famous case of someone who lent her £100,000 to pay for a summer holiday, and she only gave her £5,000 back and claimed that she thought it was a present. Now, why she should expect people to give her money to support her holiday lifestyle is one question. But the other question is, why are people doing this? What are they hoping to get from giving this money to her?
So they gave money to her expecting to get some back?
Well, the idea was, it's according to the woman who lent the money, who's now married to the Duke of Marlborough, or the former Duke of Marlborough, she expected to have this loan paid back. Fergie's line was she thought it was a gift.
Are they out of money then? Are they just sort of loaning?
Well, they go through money, you know, at a fantastic rate. They live a jet style lifestyle. You know, again, they very rarely have to pay for things. You know, people give them the use of private jets. You know, people pick up the tab when they go to hotels, when they go on holiday, the hoteliers pay. At one point, one of the daughters described British Airways as our airline. They travel always business or first class, often upgraded, when they could easily afford to buy it. And they just live, you know, a completely different life to most of us. Of course, they have very, very rich friends. I don't think it's a coincidence. You know, they're often on Abramovich's yacht or going to stay with Richard Branson. You know, it's a completely different world. So on one hand, you know, they're you know, pretending to be just like you and me and one of the people. And the next, they're living the jet set lifestyle paid for generally by someone else. Mm. And I think the big question, again, with Andrew is, you know, again, Sunning Hill, the house that was given to him as a wedding present by his mother, which they then sold for about £6 million more than the asking price, or that it was worth, and £3 million more than the asking price, to one of the people that he was doing business with. Now, this just seems, on the face of it, to be someone repaying a favor. How could they afford a £13 million ski chalet? You know, his only income was as a naval officer and £250,000 a year from his mother to do his royal duties. So, I mean, you know, money was given to him in trust funds, probably when he was born, certainly probably when he got married. But we don't know any of this. You know, royal wills, even the most minor royals, are closed. We can't see how much money's passed on. They're basically saved from paying inheritance tax. They clearly have very good financial advice. But again, the big question is, you know, what are gifts and what as them as individuals, and what are gifts to them as members of the royal family? And for example, all the files in the National Archives, the ones that exist, which talk about gifts to the royal family, those remain closed. And you know, time and time again, we hear of stories of gifts being given to them, particularly by Middle Eastern individuals, which they then sell on quietly in auctions. Fergie had a room at Sunning Hill called Aladdin's Cave, where they put all this stuff. But, you know, is this given to them because they're Mr. Joe Public, or is it given to them because they're members of the royal family? And there was at one point an attempt by mainly Labour MPs to set up a register of business interests in the way that members of the House of Lords and Commons must declare earnings and gifts. And that's never really been put through. But I think we've reached a point where, in order to maintain trust in the institution and the individuals, there should be that register. Yeah.
Do you think the police, when there are issues of fraud or the Epstein Island stuff, do the police turn a blind eye to royals, with Prince Andrew in particular?
Well, I mean, that's the feeling, and people like Norman Baker feel that, and a man called Di Davis, who was former head of Royal Security, feels that. Mm. I think the thing is, the police will say that they've investigated and that there was no case to answer. They'll say with Virginia Giuffre, well, she wasn't underage here, the offences took place abroad. But, you know, there was, Channel 4 looked into this, there were people who came forward in this country, there were offences committed here, and they were not really investigated. The police don't go there. We have the famous case with the Paul Burrell, who was actually put on trial for stealing from Diana. And at the last minute, when they realised he might begin to spill some secrets, the Queen remembered that she had agreed that, you know, he could take her underwear and keep them for safekeeping and stuff, which we all knew was completely untrue. And she did that right at the last minute when Burrell threatened to reveal some of the family secrets.
Wow, that's interesting. I didn't know there were accusers of Andrew here. Is that unrelated to Epstein?
I think it's connected with Epstein. And I think Channel 4 is still looking at that story, so it's probably better I don't say anything more. But I understand that there is more to the Epstein story than has come out.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how I can prod you for more without compromising.
Well, when the book comes out,
that's going to be big. We'll have to get you on at the time as well. That'll be.
I can say more when the book comes out.
That'll be explosive. What are some of the mad demands. I saw some articles online about the mad demands that Andrew's made while on these trade envoy missions. But they didn't seem that mad to me, actually. It was like in the titles, it was like he wants room temperature water and an ironing board that's 6 foot long. And I just thought, that doesn't seem that mad, actually. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, that was the man called Simon Wilson, who was deputy ambassador in Bahrain. I think we don't know what the demands are because they're refusing to say. It's one of the questions I put in. But I think he was quite pedantic about stuff that he wanted, I mean, which most guests wouldn't. Certainly one of the demands I got from one of the diplomats was he said, you know, can you line up some blondes for me?
Oh, I can't ask that.
Diplomat said, I'm not a pimp. So it wasn't just, you know, having the tea at the right temperature, but he had a sort of crested teapot he would bring round. He had a valet who traveled with him with this ironing board. You would think that there would be staff and an ironing board at some of the five-star hotels he stays in, because this, of course, is all paid for by us. And at the time, you know, huge costs of paying for bodyguards who had to travel with him in first class and stay in these hotels. Funnily enough, he went with his ironing board to one of his girlfriends in the States, and she said, I didn't realize you were a surfer. And he had to admit that actually this was an ironing board, not a surfboard.
Gosh, yeah, this large ironing board of people. I mean, he's an odd guy, obviously. Do you think there is something about, and we touched on this before, I think, but the psychology of being, I know I've criticized Harry a lot, but I think it's quite apt to the word spare, because you're brought up with this idea that you're better than everybody else. And then your actual experience of it is that, well, you're not, because there's only one person who's being prepared for all of that. And you're just on the side.
I don't buy the spare argument, because you could say that Princess Anne was spare. She was number two. Prince Edward was spare. But they fulfill, you know, created proper lives for themselves. They do good works and have really caused very little trouble. And you think of previous generations, Bertie, who was the younger brother of King Edward VIII, again, very dutiful, even before he became king, sort of prince. So I don't buy that. But I think they are. Andrew is just by nature, I think he feels entitled. He's a prince of the blood. You respect, you know, his mother's the queen. And he's not bright enough to realize that, you know, you need to earn your position and earn respect. It doesn't come to you automatically. So he kind of lives off because he's got nothing else really, off the fact that he is a prince of the blood. And he's someone who's never really grown up. You talked about the teddy bears, the 30 teddy bears laid out on the bed. There's even a plan so the teddy bears can be put back after the bed's made in the right order.
Are they on the bed then?
They're on the bed. They're lined up there.
So every day that has to happen?
Yeah. But, you know, lots of stories of staff being told to, you know, yeah, rather than open the curtains himself, you know, brings them up from three floors below. Got stories of policemen being asked to pick up his golf ball when he's driven it down the fairway. You know, he's just a very inconsiderate, selfish man, rather boorish, which is why Fergie divorced him in the first place. You know, it's ridiculous to suggest they'll get back together. You know, they both have their own separate love lives and have, you know, since they separated. In fact, you know, she was having affairs long before they even separated.
If I might labour the spare point, I mean, I know that there are examples of people who have just been dutiful regardless or whatever it might be, but there's, of course, Andrew, then there's Harry, and then I think Edward, which one was that? Which number? Edward and Wallace Sims?
Well, Edward VIII, but he was the older brother.
Yes, but was always sort of a bit of a spare, wasn't he? It's like psychologically.
No. I mean, he was the blue-eyed boy. He was Prince of Wales. He was very charismatic and popular, and gave that all up, and then got marginalised. But no, I don't believe that. I mean, Andrew, you know, realised, I think, clearly when Charles got married and had children, that he was moving down the line of succession. But you know, that was probably going to be inevitable. I mean, as indeed. You know, I think Harry must have realized that, you know, it's very unlikely his brother wouldn't get married and have children.
How far down are they then? So, Andrew, what would have to happen for Andrew to be king?
Well, Andrew at one point did think he might come back as regent. Excuse me, he had this wild idea with Fergie that King Charles would abdicate, would never take the throne because of all the scandals in his life, that William would be too young because he wasn't yet 18 to take the throne, and therefore Andrew would have to step in as a regent. And that's one of the reasons, supposedly, that Fergie kind of clung close to Andrew.
Wow.
She had this dream that she would be, queen. And she had another mad dream that she was going to marry John F. Kennedy Jr., that he would run for president, he would win, and she would become first lady. So they all have these wild fantasies. But yes, I mean, there was certainly, Andrew, I think, thought that he might get in there at one point.
Mm. Now you've got what? So there's Charles, then William. Are the kids too young then?
Well, they're all in the order of succession. So, including Charlotte now. So, you go all the way down through to Louis, then you go back up to Harry and Dan, and then you come back up to Andrew. So he's, I think, 12th now.
Oh.
So he's quite some way off.
Yeah. Okay. Then Harry is what, like 5th or 6th?
Well, if you think that you've got William as 1, George as 2, Charlotte is 3, and Louis is 4. Yes, he's 5th.
He's 5th. Yeah, that's not going to happen either. And I think that's part of why they left. They were like, okay, well, there's nothing doing here. We're off to America and we're going to make our own celebrity.
Well, I think they went off because they wanted to be half in and half out, and they wanted all the benefits of being the royal family, doing it like an a la carte menu, mm-hmm. doing the bits that they liked doing and interested them, and still on the side being able to make money and everything else. And they wanted to create the protection and the income that came from being associated with the royals. But I think if they genuinely wanted to be private citizens, they should give up their titles. And they should quietly go and live in California,
yeah.
and not insist on having titles for their children.
Yeah, I saw, was it recently the royal family finally dropped them from the website?
Yes, I mean, the royal family would say this was a long-standing thing, but it's taken some time for it to be implemented. But yes, I mean, clearly they've been downgraded. They're still on the website, but with just less detail, so, which suggests that there was a moment where they thought they might come back, and now I think it's pretty clear that rift is very unlikely to be healed.
Mm, but they still use that name. I see it all the time, the Sussexes and this American Riviera Orchard. Have you seen that? That's her new... Yep. company. It feels like they, very much like Andrew, are using the name of the royal family to go about their own business endeavors.
Yeah, and it's the Duke of Windsor did exactly the same, opened supermarkets, endorsed linen and cutlery, and that's, always been a big problem. They tried this with the Duchess of Edinburgh before she, or just after she got married to Prince Edward, allowed her to run her PR firm and be a member of the royal family, but it just didn't work. People took advantage of that. She got caught in a similar sting to Fergie, and they realized that you either devote your time full time to the royal family, or to business. People like Lord Lindley, for example, have run a very successful business, woodwork business, and then later as chairman of one of the auction houses. But he doesn't have royal duties. He's not on the public purse. And perhaps there are people who bought his furniture because he's Lord Lindley, but to a large extent, they bought it on the strength of his qualities as a craftsman.
Mm. So there is a way to do it. And I feel like even if Meghan and Harry just really leave all royal duty, they got completely out of there, they'd still be able to, they're still pretty famous already by virtue of having been in the royal family, and they could do it that way without getting so much criticism from people like me.
Well, yeah, if they were doing things that were based on their talents, that would be one thing. But I think a lot of it is just down to celebrity endorsement, in effect, and that's what running this website is all about. She's a public figure. She's going to get lots of hits. People want to buy things connected with her. Yeah. And Fergie's been doing this for years. I mean, she's been selling a pot from tea, jams, and endorsing all sorts of things. And, she's not there as a chat show host or promoting cranberry juice because she's Sarah Ferguson. She's there because she's the Duchess of York.
Yeah. I think they wanted that, Meghan and Harry. They wanted to be extremely talented and to be seen for their talent and ability to write movies and books and these kinds of things. And it looks like the industry has just turned around and said, you guys are terrible. You don't work very hard. You're grifters, as Spotify said. Get out. And now all they can do is just trade off their name.
Well, and that was has been the problem with Fergie. She keeps doing pilots for chat shows and then they never really go anywhere because she's not a very good interviewer. And, you know, there's a certain celebrity element to it, and she's famous. And one of my concerns is, you know, her celebrity comes from being a royal and also from her charity work. And so much of the charity work, you know, which I don't dispute, it does a lot of good. But at the same time, it's a very good way of burnishing her reputation. It's a very good way of meeting people. And, you know, lots of stories of going out to Romanian orphanages, followed by a film crew and hello, and then giving an interview to Hello for large sums of money, with that money not going to charity.
Yeah. Oh, God. Those who doesn't, they keep the money.
Yes, there's a lot of this. And, you know, that when she did her children's books, she said she would give money to charity. It turned out it was a very small percentage. She says she's giving her fee when she appears in a chat show to charity, but then it doesn't talk about the back-end payments from the foreign rights. So, you know, she's pretending to do one thing, and actually other things are going on behind the scenes. She's not totally open, as, you know, as I said, he isn't either.
What do you make of... okay, so when Kate had this photoshopped photo that came out, I read in Page Six that sources close to Meghan have come out and said, "Oh, Meghan would never make a mistake like this." To what degree do we trust sources close to Meghan? Is that Meghan and Harry? Is that how they put out their news, or could this be complete flimflam invented by a newspaper?
I think both. I mean, I think a lot of newspapers do invent stuff. A lot of newspapers clearly have very good links with members of the royal family or courtiers who they pay staff. And it works both ways. You know, Fergie, for example, was leaking lots of stories about her divorce, and particularly during the negotiations, and pretending she was a great victim and hadn't been paid enough. And she was, you know, sent down Christmas to stay at Wood Farm when they were all having lunch at the Sandringham. And, you know, they use the press, and the press use them. But no, I don't think we can trust any of the sources. And I think one of the sad things about the picture Ferrari was that there was people trusted Kate and her Kensington Palace. And I think that trust was broken. There was a sense that they weren't being given the full story. But, you know, all PR people are trying to spin the story to make their clients look better. So, and that shouldn't surprise us. And the job of the press is to try and get below that. But we kind of operate a lobby system here where the press are, the royal press are kind of dependent on the control, because it's so heavily controlled, for access and for stories. And so they'll kind of do the bidding of the PR people in the palace. And it's very hard to write about them as an outsider, as I try to do. By talking to other people, by verifying things through documents or whatever it is. But a lot of royal correspondents just basically have fed stuff and they put it down and don't challenge it. And I think that's sort of what was happening a lot. Now, of course, with AI and with Photoshop, things can be played around with. You know, this one argument that the news agencies made a lot of money by taking the photographs of the royals and sending them on, and by Kate taking the photos, they didn't have that opportunity. But, you know, their reputation's on the line. And if they are trying to promote pictures which are clearly not accurate, then, you know, it's understandable that they'll make a fuss. And it's, you know, it may be small things like just making sure that you've got pictures of all the children smiling. But, you know, there is a danger that you take people out, you stick people in who really weren't there. And that's controlling the narrative. And it's what I would say curating the story, or censoring the past and censoring the present. And, you know, that there should be complete transparency in the way that the palace and the press deal with each other.
Do you think that Prince Andrew's reckoning will come?
Well, I think, yes, it might. You know, we have more depositions still to come out. He's been caught telling lies. There may be more stories. There may be more victims who come forward. Virginia Giuffre, I understand, is in a position to write a book. And so that must be always hanging over them. So I don't think the story is finished at all. And it just needs a few people to come forward, a policeman perhaps under oath, because all the police protection officers will know exactly what was going on. He must worry that the story, you know, if there is something to hide, that it might eventually emerge. And clearly, you know, investigators like me looking at his business dealings just need to find a few people who've done business and had requests like the diplomat asking for the blondes to begin to change the perception of him, which I have to say isn't particularly high at the moment, but might go lower.
Could he end up in prison?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, you know, the royals are in effect beyond the law, it seems. I mean, the Queen, because everything, you know, she is the courts, in a sense, are her courts. The monarch can't ever be in trouble like that, but there's no reason why members of the royal family couldn't. I mean, Princess Anne has been charged, I think, with speeding and also with having a dangerous dog. So, I mean, at a low level, but I mean, whether, you know, on serious offences that could happen is it would in completely uncharted territory there.
Mm, it would be a huge story around the world.
Well, if the case is there, and I mean, you know, there have been, you know, the people, for example, could bring a private prosecution against him if there was enough evidence. And so, you know, that we've seen it with Trump, you know, just the legal problems he's had over the last few months. You know, if the material begins to emerge, however powerful you are, you know, the courts find a way of at least charging you.
Your book's out next year. Tell me a bit about your podcast.
Well, I run a podcast with an old friend of mine from I met as a teenager called Phil Craig, who's an ex-TV producer and, in fact, a royal author. He wrote a very good book on Diana. And we have been doing two interviews a week. It's called The Scandalmongers, but we range between stories on the royals, unexplained mysteries, scandals in history, and actually scandals today. So we've looked at the blood infection scandal with Factor VIII, the post office scandal. Today we looked at why Rudolf Hess may have come across to Britain. We're doing one on snooker in Sheffield. We did one on the LIBOR banking scandal. We've looked at Mountbatten, who's a previous subject of mine, and his private life. We've had people talking about Lord Lucan, Agatha Christie. It's pretty wide-ranging. A lot of journalists, people like Richard Norton Taylor, who was The Guardian's Whitehall correspondent, very much into combating official secrecy in the government. But other lighter things, someone who's a mudlarker and the story of what they find when they go mudlarking.
Ah, well, I think it's the place for in-depth analysis about scandals and the royals. I hope people go and find it. There'll be a description down below. Tell me, who is a heretic you admire?
Gosh, well, you've asked me this once before, and I said Guy Burgess.
Need another one.
I need another one. Well, in some ways, it's again one of my subjects. I'm sort of torn between John Buchan, who was my first subject, who was a writer and Governor General of Canada. 39 Steps man, who is always just seen as a novelist, but actually had a wide-ranging political career, wrote a whole range of books from ranging across poetry to a book on taxation, to biographies and historical novels. But he's often accused of being anti-Semitic and racist, which is not true, actually a very liberal figure. So in some ways, he's a misunderstood heretic, but he was very in favor of Scottish nationalism at a time when that wasn't popular. So he's one, and I'm going to have two if I'm allowed, and put Mountbatten in there, because Mountbatten in some ways was a heretic. He was a great champion, for example, of technology. He was ahead of his way in many respects, particularly in the Navy, and yet had this dark secret at the center of his life, the fact that he was not only bisexual at a time when homosexuality was a criminal offense and you could be thrown out of the Navy, but also appears to have been abused as a young boy. There are now claims, which I write about in the book, that he abused boys himself, and that's been covered up. So a slightly different phrasing of the word heretic, I think Mountbatten's reputation has been falling, whereas I think Buchan's reputation continues to grow.
Fascinating. Those are some great heretics. Thank you, Andrew Loney. People, please go and support him by checking out his podcast, The Scandalmongers. Fantastic podcast about all different kinds of scandals as well. So I hope you find that interesting. And get hold of my book, The Psychology of Secrets, My Adventures with Murderers, Cults and Influencers. It's sort of a cross between psychology stuff and true crime, all the stories that I've been looking into over the years, some really deep, dark, murky stuff. So hope you enjoy that. And I'll see you next time.